I have read with pleasure the book-selling scores. Now double it. In July, August, the rainy season, season of bugs and humidity, when the heat spell breaks, when the peacocks dance, and thousands of village pilgrims arrive, Kadamba, Malati, and Jasmine also arriving, during Janmashtami festival, you are pleased to hear the villagers singing and dancing in the Krishna Balaram Kirtan Hall, and you inquire about prasadam. You want halava and puris to be given out freely at the temple front. How many plates? In your lectures, you mention the benefit of the dham in the rainy season for serving saintly persons. If you aspire for menial service and you eat the remnants of a pure devotee, you will get his disease. When a sudden rain occurs while you are working outdoors, you gather dictaphone and Bhagavatam and move indoors, hearing the pleasant downpour as you recommence your work. In the autumn season, when the rain stops, the land and trees become green, and pink roses appear. Days are hot, while nights are cool, and all these Vrindavan phenomenon you have beautifully described in the Krishna book. You return home in autumn, and devotees join you here, as you invite them to feel it's their home also. Of your house you know every detail, even of the papers in your locked almirah. In every room you are at ease. You saved the tamal tree, and in the autumn morning, as you sit beneath it in your rocking chair, while birds chirp and hop, you give instructions. This dirt beneath the tamal tree may be used to polish the deity's brass. You surround your house with tulsis and impart the practical precept. It is the duty of every Vaishnava to water tulsi. Blaring from loudspeakers come sounds of rasa lila plays, but you do not allow your devotees to go. Thus you protect us in the dham from the dangers of sahajiya. Krishna is not so cheap that we can find him loitering in Lohi Bazaar, nor should one ever hear of Krishna from the professional reciter. In winter time, when peacocks lose their tails and devotees shiver without bodily relief, you walk in the chilly dawn, wrapped in sweater, scarf, and woolen hat, always ecstatic, seeing the bare land, animals, and birds. And even if you do not say it, we know you feel especially right in any season when you are walking in Vrindavan. In springtime, March, April, the season turns again. Yellow mustard flowers blossom, and the deities dress in yellow on the first day of spring. While walking in the park down by Seva Kunj, you stop to bargain with a subjiwala and his daughter. For a good price, you buy everything they have, bundle the vegetables in your chadar, and take them home. In every season, you live in each devotee's heart, wherever he may be, and at the same time we see you in your eternal home. Within the span of one day, at the speed of mind, you travel and also expand to live in all your centers throughout the world. You live forever in your instructions, and the follower lives with you. Wherever one follows you, that is Vrindavan. Yet now, by your mercy, your devotees may come and walk on Bhaktivedanta Swami Marg and see Vrindavan through your eyes. Seeing Vrindavan through your eyes. It is the preacher's Vrindavan. As in the Leela of Lord Chaitanya, some men remain to serve the devotees while others come and go. And here you want the children in Bhaktivedanta Swami Gurukul. To live in Vrindavan is the highest perfection. To grow up in Vrindavan is the greatest fortune. The atmosphere is beyond compare, and the Krishna Balaram Mandir is the finest in the world. You have opened our eyes and given sure direction to avoid the Mayavadis, an anomaly to the Dham with their concocted bhajans, and to avoid all vishayi in the holy Dham. By your training, we see even hogs and dogs, as well as low-class men, if they live within Vrindavan, as beyond our comprehension. Even if we do not see with love-anointed eyes, your training allows us to see through the eyes of your teachings. By serving Hari, Guru, and Vaishnava, surely Krishna will be pleased to lift the veil from our eyes. Then we may know what is Vrindavan with you. A Prabhupada moment or selection of his words is always a treat. As he said of his books, they are like a gulab jamun. On whichever side you bite it, it is sweet. And even I can light the fire of this yajna as my desire to serve overcomes pretense. Starting with Vyasadeva. It starts with Vyasadeva, in collaboration with Lord Krishna. out of compassion for the fallen, to give us the Bhagavat light. The learned one prepared these books for all the people of the age who die in darkness. Further treasure books were written by the Goswamis of Vrindavan, followed by Krishnadas Kaviraj, Vishwanath and Narottama, each great acharya in parampara adding his own, until Srila Prabhupada gathered them all together. And through him, Krishna added more into the Bhaktivedanta purports. On the order of his Guru Maharaj, he wrote the Back to Godhead essays, the first canto, pushed them through production, and sold them on the streets. Before anyone knew anything in America, he was there on the Delhi thoroughfare, the founder acharya of book distribution, handing out his books. Can I describe that cold, windy day at San Francisco Ratha Yatra, when Prabhupada, surrounded by devotees, received into his hands the first dozen Krishna books? This much I know. He took one in his hand, lovingly looking through it, then quickly sold them all, taking in dollars and handing out books. A week later, on the lawn in Boston, in front of the temple house, we grabbed at the just-arrived books and gasped at the picture of Prabhupada ecstatically smiling on the back cover. Thus he led the way. Prabhupada's soldiers against Maya. Tripurari preferred to be at the airport distributing books than at the temple in a crowd, greeting Prabhupada with flowers. Because Prabhupada had said, "I am so pleased upon all of you who are understanding the unique quality of our transcendental literature and voluntarily going out to distribute despite all difficulty. By this effort alone, you are assured to go back home, back to Godhead." "Where is Prabhupada, do you know?" "He's in his books." "And what is his mission?" "That every man and woman in America gets a book." Srila Prabhupada said, "The temple is a place not for eating and sleeping, but to be used as a base from which we send out our soldiers to fight with Maya, to drop thousands and millions of books into the laps of the conditioned souls, just like during wartime the bombs are raining from the sky. They sometimes get spit on. It is like Kurukshetra number 2. But that is part of it, expected, and the battles lead to great and final victory, where even the enemies who at least touched the books are raised at death and saved from a lower species, and there are no dearer servants to him than they who preach in the field." Library party. A plan by Prabhupada. It worked magically. We traveled, detached from sex life, placing standing orders in university libraries. What no big publisher could ever do, success wherever we went. "Do not doubt it," he wrote us. "This is the most important work." A different town every night, together, 6 men in a couple of vans. We read from your manuscript, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and we spoke of you. Telling Prabhupada's stories was all I knew, and what you said, and what I saw you do. The men all loved it and submitted to stories of you from me. In the early morning, we chanted our rounds. Each would read to himself, taking notes in diaries. After buttermilk with granola, we changed from dhotis to suits, loaded the briefcases into the vans, and drove to the target, where we worked as a team, to somehow get the orders before the end of the day. It was Prabhupada's party, based on his books. It ran on his order, and won by his mercy. "Such freedom you gave us. We were singing with your singing as we rode, roaming from state to state, brahmacharis without a care, only the order of the Guru. When I hear that my books are selling nicely, I become energetic like a young man. Because he had no material desire, nothing material could encourage him. But news of the books going out, seeing his young followers take it seriously, hearing competition between the temples, translations into different languages, favorable reviews by esteemed professors, seeing copies of just published volumes, these were the sweet juices encouraging Srila Prabhupada. As long as books were being printed and widely distributed, the illness of his body was relieved, and problems for money, for construction in India, were solved. I never thought this Krishna consciousness movement would have been so successful, he said. Actually, the whole thing rests upon these books. There is no such literature anywhere in the world as our books. So go on selling more and more books. His clear message, received from his Guru Maharaj and carried down to us. Get the books out, by hook or by crook. Which didn't mean criminally, but you have to find a way. You cannot say, I cannot give out these books. It is his order for all time. That is Prabhupada. Everyone knows that's what he wants, and that is what the people need. Bright morning in Denver. In the limousine, he revealed his thoughts. The leaders of India were fighting, and he wanted to offer them, both Indira Gandhi and Jayaprakash Narayan, the wisdom of the Bhagavad Gita. So he had written letters to them if they would listen to him. In the Vedic age, it used to be that they would listen. Now they don't. But he asked us, what do you think? I have written a draft of a letter this night. Let us take a chance. We want good for everyone, and this is the only medicine. Hare Krishna for all wrongs. We sannyasis replied pragmatically that the letters might not be read, and one of us said, what about writing a letter to the U.S. president? We were embarrassed and foolish in our remarks, but we were also aware that Prabhupada didn't have to ask our advice, and we were awed by his great concern. We also believed in his capacity to solve their problems, if they would listen. We saw his insight into the times, the upside-down nature of the age, when the deepest, most influential soul has only a few young men to speak to, and the leaders will not listen. As we rode, Prabhupada asked how things were going in Denver. I said the devotees were distributing many books. That is the most successful, he replied. Suddenly I saw it. If the people of the city did nothing else but buy his books and to some extent read them, then Denver was a good place to preach, even if it was otherwise a beef-raising capital. When we arrived at the scenic park, the sun rose so brightly in golden rays that any photos taken that morning captured a portrait of flooding light. Prabhupada walking wrapped in gray, his disciples' chilly, bright faces adoring his discourse and his personal way. That was the morning he said, devotees do not have to work like asses, but Krishna will provide for them. We were laughing and debating as he beat down the charge that a devotee is a parasite escapist. Open your eyes, he loudly challenged. We are enjoying our father's property. They are escaping, or we are. Just see how foolish they are. A little intrigue. In the Denver temple, they allowed the women to dance up front. Sannyasis and brahmacharis were face to face with jumping women. One of the sannyasis requested them to stay in the back, as in any other temple. But Swarat Dasi, wife of the temple president, took it as an unbearable insult and decided to leave husband, temple, spiritual life. She was seen going tearfully by Upendra Das, who in a sudden move brought the case to Srila Prabhupada. He agreed to see her, and she came in crying. "What is the problem? They make us dance at the back." "That's all right," consoled Prabhupada, looking to Upendra and then to her. "You can dance in front," he said, and he spoke assuringly. "Spiritual life is not easy. We sometimes have to tolerate. But go on chanting and hearing." As any disciple would, in the soothing rays of his compassion, Swarat Dasi calmed down, and the next morning she was dancing up front, although it really wasn't right, and eventually they saw it and retired chastely to the back. The woman's threat and Upendra's move were both unpopular for bringing our spiritual master into such an emotional case. Yet it afforded us another view of Prabhupada's personal handling as he stressed his strongest wish that we somehow remain in his Krishna consciousness movement. Looking back, one day after the Sunday feast, when he was alone after he had lectured, Prabhupada called for me. As I entered, he suddenly began, "The forms are very important." While I agreed, in a theoretical way, that Krishna-conscious forms should be developed, why tell me, I thought. No such forms were in my zone or even in my mind. But now I take it he was instructing me to do it in the future, and now I believe in the great importance of Krishna-conscious forms, and one is my home. How many things did he teach which I still do not understand as applicable for me? And when will I understand his deeper meaning? When will I wake up and hear Prabhupada's prophetic call and fully take up his work? What is there to wait for when already we have his spoken command? Bold in Chicago, July 2, 1975. He asked the mayor of Evanston to donate a large building, even after being told by the mayor that he wanted it for his city hall. Prabhupada asserted a solution to crime based solely on the transcendental power of the holy name and prasadam to purify the hearts of criminals. When challenged that his plan was like so many religions, Prabhupada replied, "No, we are strictly following, and it is potent." Then he challenged his sannyasi disciples to get out, hold meetings. A sannyasi should do more than ring the temple bells. Not only teach the devotees in class, and not only distribute the books, but speak on the books to important people. Tell them what is lacking, now that they are admitting they are baffled and want to stop crime. Sri Govinda Das arranged for the Sheraton Hotel Hall, a prasadam buffet, a pillow for Prabhupada, and reporters came. Prabhupada was elegant, aristocratic philosopher in saffron silk. His English usage was clear, but they could not understand him as he explained Varnashrama Dharma. "Do you know that what you say goes against everything American?" "But we can train you," said Prabhupada. "As you are training engineers, you can train first-class and second-class men." He could have been silent and stayed in Vrindavan. He obtained no selfish pleasure sitting on a pillow in the hotel, which he regarded as a brothel. It was no special treat for him to talk with snappy, irreverent journalists who cannot listen to philosophy for more than 10 seconds before they blow their mental fuses. But he came among them because he and the previous acharyas wanted to help. And now society's leaders were admitting they do not know how to solve crime. As the mayor had remarked to him, "We can use a new approach because we are not successful now." But the reporters were not concerned to waste time hearing the Vedas. They were more interested in the Swami's, quote, "expensive gold watch," unquote, and they wrote down snide notes about the adoring nature of Prabhupada's disciples, like flies looking for a sore. The old man, they saw, the retired businessman from India, and when, at their request, he spoke about women, then suddenly they had this story The Swami was a male chauvinist. Walking quickly to the phone or to go write up their stories, the reporters felt rewarded. Instead of spiritual chit-chat, they'd got an angle against the Swami for saying, get this now, women are less intelligent than men. When Prabhupada heard they were putting it on the news, radio and TV, and that another TV crew was coming out to see him, he was amused and pleased. At least they were saying Hare Krishna. They are not explaining it fully about spiritual equality, said Brahmananda, or about great women in Krishna consciousness. Yes, great women are chaste and faithful, said Prabhupada, like Kunti and Gandhari. All souls are equal, but bodily they are different, and women should be protected from exploitative men. But the feminist TV crew who came into his room knew only the body and demanded all are equal. Then why does the woman bear the child and the man cannot? That one they couldn't answer. But it didn't matter to them. They were too angry to hear him. They wanted liberation through the body, and they thought he was against them. In that case, if they do not like to hear, Prabhupada said later, then let us chant Hare Krishna, that's all. Remember the Babaji. In Chicago, one of his disciples was described to him as about to die. He was Adi, and he had a heart condition. Several doctors concurred he would die in 6 months or so, no cure. So he asked Prabhupada if he could take sannyas. Prabhupada said, no, that is for preaching. Then Prabhupada thought it over and called back his secretary. If he thinks he will die, then I may award him Babaji, and he may simply sit down in Mayapur and chant Hare Krishna. So it was done in the temple, because you think you will die, Prabhupada said. Therefore we give you this, an advantage to chant and go back to Godhead. But devotees should not come to him asking, please give me sannyas, please give me Babaji. It is a stage of life, he said, and when one enters it, then he can take it, not by nagging the spiritual master. It was thrilling to see him take the white cloth from Prabhupada who sat on the Vyasasan. This was the first time in our society. So Babaji went to Mayapur and chanted Hare Krishna, and his heart began to pain him. He lived in a little hut, and it got hot. He was just supposed to chant, and he was supposed to die. But finding Mayapur too hard, he returned to the West for residence in different temples, first Detroit, then San Diego, which aren't the same as Mayapur. He got bored and restless, trying to chant 100 rounds and read all day. So he wrote Prabhupada a letter. Can I give this up and do active preaching? His terminal disease seemed to be abating, but he wasn't pleasing Prabhupada, who soon wrote back, don't be whimsical. You took Babaji, so live up to it. No preaching, but sit and chant. That is your vow. I admired Adi's vows and told him he was fortunate not to have so many duties. He seemed all right, but he kept getting restless, and finally he gave up. He went back with his wife, left all spiritual life, and he never died. I saw him once later, pink and healthy, but spiritually dead. So I can understand we should not prematurely ask for Babaji, but go on preaching on the order of Prabhupada, and whatever we promise him, we must stick to that, or else. It is a fate worse than death. Yes, better Babaji had died in Mayapur, chanting the holy name. To Philly, to Berkeley, to L.A. To Philadelphia you went, met by 100 East Coast devotees and reporters from TV, who again challenged your policy towards women and added, we heard you also discriminate blacks from whites. You replied, no, only we in Krishna consciousness are uniting man and woman, black and whites, in a happy spiritual family, whereas others talk but cannot come together in love and trust. What about skepticism, disappointment? Rabindra Swarup asked. And you uplifted all devotees by describing Krishna Loka, where Krishna is pleasing everyone and there is no disappointment. To one who lives in Krishna consciousness, you promised, that will be his. Ratha Yatra from Independence Hall was well received by thousands, and so you commented from where you saw it atop Subhadra's gorgeous cart. I am thinking the American Vaishnavas are permanently in the West. Women reporters, favorable and not. Parents of disciples, favorable and not. Offensive and receptive professors came to see you. And in each case, you patiently explained the message of Lord Chaitanya, while they sat on cushions on the floor, and you sat on their level, on a saffron pillow behind a desk with flowers, drinking water and preaching. To Berkeley, their new church, new red Vyasasan, two golden lions on each side of your seat. Sometimes your countenance was as grave as the dark gray ocean as you lectured. My duty is to see that my disciples, who have accepted me as guru, may not fall down. That is my anxiety. What will happen to your movement when you die? Asked the reporter. I will never die, you replied. I shall live from my books, and you will utilize. Walking on the Berkeley campus, they showed you the high tower from which the students jumped to death. Disappointment, you explained. This is their education. On nuclear weapons, they must use it. This is nature's arrangement that you all die. Yogi Bhajan, Swami Chidananda, and several prominent Sikhs and Jains visited Prabhupada in Berkeley to invite him to their unity convention. I told you before, Prabhupada said, there's not going to be any unity. And they laughed because he was so candid and spoke the truth. Unless they accept the Bhagavad Gita as it is, no unity. But all agreed to attend the San Francisco Ratha Yatra, and with Prabhupada they sat and took prasadam. It was the largest Ratha Yatra in the West. Some trouble with the cartwheels, but finally, Prabhupada was smiling and the sun came out. 800 disciples present, 10,000 participants. His lecture invited them, but when he noticed people leaving, if you do not want to hear, then simply chant Hare Krishna. Thus, in another city of madness, violence, and death, he performed the Ratha Yatra just as he had envisioned from his childhood. To Los Angeles, where the marathon he ordered was underway to produce 17 books in 2 months. He answered all their questions, the Bengali Sanskrit editors, the artists, the publishers. Why did he order the impossible push? Because time was limited, and for years manuscripts were piling up. How could he write more if nothing were published? So the BBT was working 24 hours a day, the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita. In his garden, in the early evening, peaceful despite shouts from the neighborhood karate school, in an enclosed space rich with grass, cared for flowers and miniature trees, Prabhupada, traveling, flying everywhere, working, worrying over ISKCON, relaxed for an hour, hearing Krishna book with pensive, alert demeanor, mostly silent, hearing and sometimes remarking out loud, how wonderful is Krishna. Sometimes he places his hands over his face and smooths the skin downwards, as a man does when he is tired or reflecting inwardly. What is Prabhupada thinking? The Shastra says no one can know the mind of the Vaishnava, but we know. The depth we cannot fathom or the intimacy of his prayer, but we know he is never lost to Krishna and Krishna is never lost to him. He contemplates continued travel, 5 more U.S. cities in 2 weeks, then Canada, the Northeast U.S., Europe, India. He is concerned for his disciples and projects and distressed for the condition of all people. As he said in Denver, we want good for everyone. Let us take a chance. As long as he has power, for this he will travel and preach.
Freedom from illusion.
Laguna Beach is, of course, a nice place. Nice beach and people. Although sometimes no sun comes through the sky all morning, as when Prabhupada went there. He walked along the beach, and there was garbage and seaweed, and two big dogs ran toward him until he raised up his cane and shouted, "Hut!" And the dogs ran the other way. In Laguna, Rishi came to see him, a shaven-headed sannyasi, now bearded, time taken with drugs and saxophone, and no deep respect for his master. "Just dropped by to say hello. I have more freedom now." "Where is your freedom?" Prabhupada demanded. "If you cannot stop from growing old, where is freedom? If you are controlled by drugs, how are you free?" Rishi laughed, but he had no answer. As we can have no answer against time's demands, and there is no good reason to leave the Guru's order except the guna of passion, guna of ignorance, from which Prabhupada came to save us in his visit to this place. To San Diego, to Dallas, to Mississippi. In San Diego, in the middle of an outdoor festival, there was a confrontation from a loud-voiced man just as Prabhupada was about to lecture. "What does he say?" asked Prabhupada, and the nearest devotee replied, "He says he wants to have sex more than once a month." A tough note to begin on, especially in the summer park in Southern California, before a young crowd, noisy under any circumstances. But Prabhupada replied with his words extemporaneous and focused on the man who had shouted. "Sex life is not denied," he said, "but in a regulated form, to produce good population. Otherwise, the world is going to hell." He described the empires of the past, and he gave praise to Americans for helping him. "They have a good heart. The only thing wanting is Krishna consciousness. Somehow he won them over, and they chose to hear, several hundred sitting on a lawn, quietly attentive, including the man who had shouted." "Why are you unhappy?" Prabhupada asked. "The cause of this you should try to find out. It is a lack of Krishna consciousness." As he finished, the people applauded, and almost everyone agreed to eat prasadam. Some of them even chanted, and 10 or 20 stood up, dancing back and forth with their arms upraised. Dallas. "It is my home. I have so many children and grandchildren, and I have come to see them." It was warm, and some of the children unruly, even in his presence. Yet they loved him and saw their parents and teachers' love for him. And they felt their own appreciation for this elderly person who gave them rasagula and was different than any other person. "He sat on a great red vyasasan. He was Krishna's pure devotee. He wrote all the books. He walked with a cane and with the sannyasis. He flew in at the airport and smiled. And it was he who brought the deity of Radhakala Chanji." And as they approached him, he always gave them prasadam sweets. He was sitting in a rocker in the backyard. Then most children were in bed. "The sky is made by Krishna," he said, and all looked up as on a cue at the turning dark blue Texas evening sky. Before him on the grass sat his disciples and guests, looking up at his words, seeing, yes, Krishna made the sky. There was no doubt in his presence. He could slash your doubts. Also in Dallas, he admitted, he felt ill. But that didn't stop him. To the Mississippi farm, I went along too, and now I remember him so others can rejoin us. This is the service of the poem, an attempt to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, by bringing its members and friends closer to Prabhupada. Only through him can we make the revolution. To us, he is like Christ and more, and time will bear that out. His passage through the earth is not like yours and mine. He arrived at the flat land and went into the house, where he encouraged the residents. Stick to this spot, be satisfied, no artificial life. From the moment he spoke, the Mississippi farm took birth. Then in a smaller room, he talked of cows and milk, how every drop can be drunk or transformed until everything is used, and there is no killing her, but sweets and curd and cheese and ghee, from her natural bounty, this mother of earth. Do not kill her. With no shirt on, he stood in the kitchen. It was warm, and flies came, but everyone watched him excitedly. Why? Because of love. Because of that devotional love, the hour of cooking is still memorable today. And the Mississippi kitchen is the place where Prabhupada cooked 9 preparations in an hour in his shiny brass boiler, his thin arms moving his expert, swift chemist's pinching of spices, tossing them in the pot, and deft homegrown secrets known only to him. Dal, rice, chapatis, Kerala, potatoes, eggplants, peas, when made or tasted by the pure devotee, it is known as Maha Maha Prasadam. He walked in the fields through tall sugar cane and grains and criticized Nityananda Das for rusting machinery in the rains, and then went back to New Orleans all in a day. End of the American tour. In Detroit, Prabhupada showed his potency. Henry Ford's great-grandson bowed at his feet and chauffeured him in the company car. Walter Ruther's daughter, a surrendered soul, gave all her money and went out to get more by distributing his books. With such rich men's children by his side, Prabhupada took a walk through the dreamlike Fisher Mansion. Each room is worth the entire price, he softly confided, and told the owner he would give him full cash. Unsure exactly how the money would come in, yet he desired the gorgeous building, not with the plan that he would live there, but that Radha and Krishna should reign for the people of Detroit to receive their liberating mercy. The place was his within a day, and the next day he left. In Toronto, he was shown a massive stone church, and he asked the Indians to try and purchase it. Then, suddenly, he was called away from further touring of America. A telegram from Delhi. If he came right away, the Prime Minister would see him. Who can appreciate the pure devotee except a devotee? Who else cares? How can we say the puffed-up man, whose intelligence is stolen, the lowest of mankind, or the outright atheists, will also like to hear of Prabhupada's potency, his gifts, his sweet intimate moments, his turning the crowds towards Krishna? How can we attract to him the enemies of Krishna? Let us describe him as he is, and hope they may rise to meet him, attracted by some aspects of his life and mission. Just give us more. Prabhupada Katha, how he went to India, what he did next, and if you can, give us more.